Today is the 2nd of December 2021, Thursday class. So we'll be continuing from our sharing from this book, The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. We are going through volume 1, page 15 on the actual hard copy text. The PDF file, I think, is either page 8 or 9, or 10 already, sorry, page 10. Just relax body and mind, then maintain a stable posture. Then we shall off the light, and you can have your half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So awareness-based meditation is very simple when you understand. Its main intent is to develop awareness and use the awareness to meditate. The moment you are without thought, you're already aware, so no need to do anything. Just let your thoughts cease or subside. Don't do anything. That's why the four support to support awareness-based meditation are very important. First is to relax completely body and mind. Feel that you are completely relaxed and at ease. Means body and mind completely without problem, at ease. Then after that, second support is to maintain silence. Don't try to do anything, don't try to know. Just maintain silence. The moment you are able to do that, your whatever sankhara activity or mundane mind, they will slow down, because you don't feed it with any more thought energy. Then the mind become very quiet and very still. So you need to be patient. You need to allow the thinking mind to settle down, so that you can realize the awareness nature within. Without thought, the awareness will surface. Then you realize there is another mind within, which is without the thinking, without the thought process. That is your true mind, your silent mind, your meditative mind. So that is the mind that we are going to develop. That is the mind that we need to stabilize, so that we can use it to observe, to meditate, to insight in the phenomenon, to develop understanding, to see things as they are. So all these are only possible when you can maintain awareness to stabilize that true mind, the awareness nature within. Then the third support is to maintain this awareness for as long as you can. Technically, it's 24 hours. But initially, you can maintain the awareness during your waking moment. It's already very good. Then later on, when you become skillful, you are able to allow the awareness to go in, to silence completely, so that your mind and your body, they can rest. Then your awareness follow. So the awareness is very sensitive. Whatever subconscious release or unconscious release or movement of thought activity, it can be aware. So even when you are resting, like going into the sleeping mode, your awareness is still there. Then you can understand what is going on. You can understand what are dreams and all those things. So this is how you develop understanding, through the awareness nature's ability to observe what is going on. When you are conscious, when you are aware, when you are without thought, and when you are resting, So all this become possible if you know how to develop this awareness-based meditation. Okay, you all can now slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness or awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the meditative mind states that you need to use to develop the cultivation in the midst of life, or we call it the daily mindfulness cultivation. And also, you need these mind states to be heedful in the midst of life to actually develop the understanding of reality within life. So all these are very useful. That's why awareness-based meditation is very important. You cannot be aware. You don't have the stability to be aware. You cannot be mindful throughout the day. You cannot be mindful means you cannot be heedful throughout the day. So Dhammapada verse 21. It's very clear, the Buddha, in that proclamation, he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas if you are not heedful, the heedless are as if dead. So heedlessness is the path to the death. So these are very fundamental understanding. That's why I do really progressive meditation. You have to be heedful. And to be heedful, the first thing you need to develop is mindfulness. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. When you are able to do that, the Buddha said, you'll have heedfulness. Appamadena, sampadita. So strive on with heedfulness. That is the last advice of the Buddha before his parinibbana. So heedfulness, when you understand, it will lead to progress. Whereas heedlessness, it will lead to downfall. You can never progress in the cultivation of Dhamma. Without heedfulness, you are as if dead. The heedless are as if dead. It's very clear. According to Dhammapada verse 21. Then 22, 23, they strengthen the explanation of the importance of heedfulness. So this one you have to constantly reflect, contemplate, and develop the understanding. So we have completed part one. Now we are going through part two. Part one, we covered the five periods of the Buddha's teaching. This five period, they have eight teachings. So that one we have covered. So now we are going into part two of the introduction. The five profound meaning. According to the Tiantai school, before lecturing the sutta proper, one first examines its principles by means of the five profound meanings. So these have been adopted by Mahayana, especially the Tiantai school. So there are five profound meanings where we need to examine its principle so that we understand their profound meanings. The first one is explanation of the title of the sutta. Then the second one is discrimination of the substance. Then number three is the clarification of the teachings. Then number four is discussion of the function. And number five is determination of the teaching mark. So these are the five profound meaning of a sutta, so that we will be like more focused and understand what this sutta is all about. Mm. So the first part is understanding the title. So explanation of what the sutta titles are. Sutra titles fall into seven classes according to their reference to people, Dhamma, and analogy, which is as follows. A is the three singles. Three of the seven classifications are established by reference to either a person, a Dhamma, or an analogy. Take for example, the Buddha speaks of Amitabha Sutta. It's an example of a title established solely by reference to people. Here it means the Buddha in Amitabha Buddha. In this sutra, Sakyamuni Buddha spoke of the pure western land of ultimate bliss of Amitabha Buddha. In the past, when Amitabha was cultivating the coastal ground, he was a bhikkhu by the name of Dhamma Treasury Fazang. At that time, he made 48 great vows, each one of which concerned taking living beings across the sea of suffering to rebirth in the land of ultimate bliss, where they can cultivate and become Buddhas. The sutra is extremely important, for in the Dhamma ending period, it will be the last to disappear. So we have here another sutta which will be the last to disappear. The first sutta to become extinct will be the Surangama Sutta. The Surangama Sutta explains all the affairs of the world in great detail and exposes the secret of heaven and earth. After it becomes extinct, all the other sutta will pass out of existence one by one until only the Amitabha Sutta remains. When the Amitabha Sutta has become extinct, only the phrase Namo Amitabha or Namo Amitabha Buddha will remain in the world for 100 years. For 100 years more, then only the word Amitabha Buddha will remain yet another 100 years to save living being. After that, the Buddha Dhamma will disappear from the human realm. There won't be many people left in the world then either. The three disasters of destruction by flood, fire, and wind, and the eight difficulties and all manner of calamity will arise and completely destroy the world. We shall pay attention to the Amitabha Sutta because in the Dhamma ending age, the Pure Land Dhamma Dao will be the most suitable for saving sentient being. The proper Dhamma age, however, may be found right within the Dhamma ending age. For example, the Dhamma is just now being transmitted to America, and the people are hearing it for the first time. We could say it is the proper Dhamma and Dhamma age. In America, many people like to sit in meditation and investigate the Dhamma, and the customs of Buddhism are gradually being introduced. So this one is the first sutta the Buddha speaks, the Amitabha Sutta. So the uniqueness of this Amitabha Sutta is because it evolved the great vows of Amitabha Buddha, and it is relatively much more simpler to cultivate. That's why it can last very long. Whereas the other sutta, especially that Surangama Sutta, that will be the first to disappear because the Mara knew if that sutta remained, Surangama Sutta, which described clearly about the 50 deviant samadhi, 50因魔. Once that sutta is gone, living being can be gullible. They will lose the ability to check whether the samadhi that they have developed or concentration that they have developed, they are the true samadhi or not. So this 50 deviant samadhi, 50因魔, is the flagship of Surangama Sutta. That's why this sutta will be the first to disappear. And the Mara knew, if you don't cause this sutta to disappear, living being can never become gullible. Very difficult. Your most cultivator will know they will be forewarned and there will be precaution taken. So that's the reason why the Buddha actually spoke the Surangama Sutta. Then finally, Sakyamuni Buddha wanted to share the Amitabha Sutta is because this Amitabha Sutta is very unique. It will be the last to disappear because over the long period of cultivation and perfection, Sakyamuni Buddha has come to know and understand how does the mind-ending age normally end, the pattern of it and all this thing. So that's why we have this part which has been shared. Then the next one is the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. So this sutta is a title established solely by reference to a Dhamma. It's no more a person. Nibbana is a Dhamma of neither production nor extinction. Nibbana is cessation, the unconditioned. Then the Brahmanet Sutta is a title established solely by reference to analogy. Means the Brahmanet as an analogy. The Brahmanet is a great circular net curtain which hangs in the heaven of the great Brahma King. It is sort of like a fishnet, except that instead of being used to catch fish, it is used as an adornment because the great Maha Brahma or Brahma King likes his palace to be the most beautiful and most magnificent. Within each hole in the net, there is a precious jewel which emits light by day and night. The light of every pole is reflected in every other pole, and the spaces in the net interpenetrate. In that sutta, the Buddha explained the Bodhisattva precepts. If you keep the precept, you will emit light like the poles in the Brahma King's net. Then the second of the five profound meaning is the three paths. This one is on the first profound meaning explanation of the title. We have finished the three singles, now is the three pair. So example of sutta with the three pairs are the Sutra of Manjushri's question on prajna is the title established by reference to a person, Manjushri, and the Dhamma he requested, prajna. Because Manjushri was the Bodhisattva of great wisdom, he could ask about prajna, the Dhamma of wisdom. Only a wise person can ask about the Dhamma of wisdom. If Manjushri hasn't been so wise, he would not have been able to ask about the Dhamma of wisdom. So that is the example. Then the other one is the Sutra of the Lion's Roar of the Thaskam one. So this is a sutra established by reference to a person, the Thaskam one, and an analogy, Lion's Roar. Thaskam one is one of the 10 titles of the Buddha. The Lion's Roar is an analogy for his speaking of Dhamma. When the lion roars, all the wild beasts are terrified. The wolves, snakes, tigers, and panthers turn docile or become so frightened that they don't know what to do. Then the next sutta is the wonderful Dhammaluta Sutta. So this is the title established with reference to a Dhamma, which is wonderful Dhamma. And an analogy. So the wonderful Dhamma is a Dhamma. The lotus flower is an analogy. So it's a pair. The wonderful Dhamma is like a lotus flower. Then C, three in one, the last one. The seventh classification contains reference to a person, a Dhamma, an analogy, means all three are present. The great means expensive Buddha flower adornment sutra refers to the Buddha as a person, the great mean, expensive as a Dhamma, and the flower adornment as an analogy. Those who study the Dhamma must be able to explain this seven classification from memory. This one is according to Master Shen Huang. You don't have to do that. If you cannot explain them, you are not a student of the Dhamma. The Buddhist scripture numbers in the thousand, but there is not one of them that cannot be classified by its title in the one of the seven categories above. When you study a sutta, you should know how its title is classified. You may then deeply enter the sutra storehouse. Having deeply entered the sutra storehouse, you may have wisdom like the sea. If you don't even recognize the title, what use is it to study the sutra? It's like saying, I have a very good friend. We get along very well. Really? Someone asked, what is his name? I don't know. You say, so what kind of good friend is he? If you don't even know his name, and if you don't know his name, how could you know where he lives and what he does? The same is true of the principles of sutras. If you don't understand the title, you won't be able to enter deeply the sutra storehouse and has the wisdom like the sea. If you don't have wisdom like the sea, you may study the Buddha Dhamma all your life, and you will still be just as confused. So the seven sutra title classification are very important, and everyone should know them. Then they may really investigate the Dhamma. So although it's said here, but as far as my understanding goes, you don't have to commit to memory. You just understand it, that's it, good enough. Getting to know a sutta is like getting to know a person. First, you learn his name. This corresponds to the explanation of the title. Then you learn to recognize him on sight. Is he tall or short? How much does he weigh? What does he look like? Is he healthy? This corresponds to the discrimination of the substance. Then you discover his basic principle. Is he a businessman, or is he a student, or is he a laborer? What is his occupation in general? What are his interests? This is the classification of the doctrine. Suppose he's a student, what function does he serve? Does he simply study and then go to sleep? No doubt he will develop his talent and become a useful person of society, a scientist or perhaps a philosopher. If he studies architecture, he may become an architect or may become an architectural engineer. If he studies literature or education, he will be able to teach people in the future. People in every field can serve a useful function. Sutra are the same in that they each have their meaning. This is the discussion of the function. Finally, knowing a person's name, his appearance, his basic principles, and his job, you will want to ask what his position is. He or she may be a professor, a manager of a home, a firm, or a homemaker. In any case, each person has a role to play, and once you identify it, you will be able to determine just what his accomplishment in life will be. The same thing can be done with sutra. This corresponds to the determination of the teaching mark. According to the seven title classification explained above, this sutra is established by reference to a Dhamma and an analogy. The wonderful Dhamma is the Dhamma, and the Dhamma flower, the lotus flower, sorry, is an analogy. Because the wonderful Dhamma is difficult to understand, the lotus is used as an analogy. Then now we will go into the commentaries, explanation on the part, the wonderful Dhamma. Ultimately, how wonderful is the wonderful Dhamma? It cannot be thought of and it cannot be expressed in words. You may try to comprehend it, but no matter how much you think, you won't understand it. For once you understand it, it's no longer wonderful. It is inconceivable and unthinkable. How much the less can it be spoken of? But you can't just say it's ineffable and leave it at that. You still must speak of it. The speaking itself is not wonderful, but merely describe the wonderful. Ultimately, the genuine wonder is something known only to the Buddha. Only the Buddhas can clearly understand this state. Means that title, Wonderful Dhamma. The word wonderful is very unique. Common people may claim, I understand the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. But what do they mean by that? The wonderful Dhamma is just that which cannot be understood. If it cannot be understood, you may ask, then what's the use of lecturing on it? We will explain a small part of its meaning, not its entire meaning. It would simply be impossible to explain the entire scope of the meaning of the word wonderful. I wouldn't do it. I'm being quite frank and open on this point. I don't go around saying I understand and explaining things I know nothing about. Such behavior is just cheating or deceiving others, and cheating oneself as well. So now I will explain only a little bit of the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. However, I don't know how long it will take me to explain even this little bit. It took the great master Zi Zi of the Tiantai School 90 days to lecture on the one word wonderful. During the past summer, 1968, I took 96 days to explain the Surangama Sutta. And that is really rocket speed. In Hong Kong, it took me 14 months to explain the Surangama Sutta. In 90 days, Great Master Zizi did not finish explaining the word wonderful. He only explained a small part of it. Now let's talk about the word wonderful. How many days will it take to explain it? I haven't figured it out in advance. It will take however long it takes. What is wonderful? The wonderful Dhamma is wonderful. Living beings are wonderful. What is wonderful? The Buddha is wonderful. There is nothing within heaven and earth that is not wonderful. Tell me, what is not wonderful? Everything is the wonderful Dhamma. And the possibilities for explaining the word wonderful are unlimited. You may say this is wonderful and that is wonderful. But where does the wonderful come from? I will tell you. The wonderful comes from the mind. How is it that you know it is a wonderful Dhamma? It's because you have a mind. Because the Dhamma of the mind is wonderful. The Dhamma of living being is also wonderful. The Buddha Dhamma is wonderful. So, how is the Dhamma of the mind wonderful? All of the mountains and rivers and the earth with its vegetation and dwellings. Where does it come from? It all comes from the present thought in the mind of every one of us. How does the thought arise from the mind? I don't know, you say. Your not knowing is wonderful. I do know, you say. Then your knowing is also wonderful. Both knowing and not knowing are wonderful. Why? Could you not knowing be anything but wonderful? Sorry, could your not knowing be anything but wonderful? Could your knowing be anything but wonderful? The Dhamma of the mind is wonderful. In Hong Kong, I publish a magazine called Sing Fa, or My Dhamma. 3 months, 3 monthly issues were published and distributed free of charge. Anyway, the Dhamma of the mind is wonderful. You ask, how can the heart be wonderful? Now, in Chinese, the word for mind also means the heart. Most people think of their heart as being a lump of flesh inside the chest. But there is a mistake, because that is to mistake a thief for your son. Like Ananda, who in the Surangama Sutta held that his mind is inside his body. That heart is nothing but a lump of flesh and is useless. It is called the heart, which arises because of accumulation. For it comes into being from the amassing of affliction. It is also called the condition and considering heart, because it is able to work condition to its own advantage and consider matters. This heart is the sixth consciousness. It is responsible for our false thinking and scattered thought or heedless thought. Such is the flesh heart. It goes by many names. Do you think that the mind Dhamma that I am explaining refers to this false thinking mind? The false thinking mind can also be classified as the mundane mind without wisdom, or the thinking mind before you become enlightened. Then the other one is the heedless thinking mind. Do you mean to say that I have another mind? You ask. Then Xianhua said, you mean you didn't know? Isn't that wonderful? You don't even know about your own mind. That really is wonderful. You don't even know about your mind. How would you understand your own life? You come into this world in a confused state. That confused state is also wonderful. You leave the world in a stupor, understanding nothing. You don't understand how you got here and when it comes time to die. You leave all muddled with no idea of where you are going. This too is wonderful. In that sense, birth and death both are wonderful, but the coming and the going, you don't understand. You may reply, Dharma Master, you have said that birth and death are wonderful, and I grant that you are. However, the duration of my life itself is not very wonderful. Your life is even more wonderful. Why? Without being aware of it, a child grows into adolescence. The adolescent then become a grown-up. Without being aware of what is happening, the grown-up grows into an old man. Is this not wonderful? Not only does he become an adult, but he gives birth to many sons and daughters. If it were not wonderful, how, without once even being aware of them, could so many changes take place? Perhaps you find my explanation of the wonderful Dhamma to be meaningful and admit the Dhamma Master said this is wonderful Dhamma, and it certainly must be so. But before I explain the wonderful Dhamma, you didn't know it was wonderful. The wonderful Dhamma refers to right within one's not knowing, within that unawareness, nevertheless, acting according to the wonderful Dhamma. That's wonderful. There is no end to speaking about the wonderful Dhamma. What is right in front of you is wonderful. Your ability to see it is also wonderful. If you were not wonderful, you couldn't see. Then you ask, is that which I cannot see not wonderful? What you cannot see is even more wonderful. Both what you see and do not see, hear and do not hear, are wonderful. Let me give you a small example. I wrote the word Amitabha Buddha on this yellow cloth and hang it in front of the platform. One of my students was looking up at it, and when I asked him what he was looking at, he said, it's really wonderful. So in this case, he was able to see how deep he knew that it was wonderful. That's also wonderful. Not just the seeing itself, but the ability to see is also wonderful. The question of seeing is discussed at length in the Surangama Sutta. There it is asked, who is it who is able to see? Who does the seeing? And when you cannot see, why can't you see? Isn't that wonderful as well? Why is it that you are able to see things nearby? Well, because they are nearby. But isn't that wonderful? Why can't you see things that are far away, but only things that are nearby? Isn't that wonderful? When you see the color yellow, an impression of the color yellow is created in the field of your eight consciousness. The same applies to seeing other colors, green, red, white, or black. How is the impression created upon those instructions? Is the impression created? Upon whose instruction is the impression created? No one. And that is wonderful. There is no one next to you saying, now you are seeing yellow. The yellow impression should arise within your mind. You do it yourself, isn't this wonderful? Ability to create this impression is wonderful, isn't it? Hearing works in the same way. Why do some sound please us and others annoy us? Who instruct you to like and dislike them? No one. Then why do you? Oh, sorry. Then why do some sight delights you and others does not? Why do you give rise to like and dislike? We crave some forms that we found beautiful and are repulsed by others that we find ugly. Who instruct you to do this? I don't know. Who tell me to do it? I just think that way, you say. You just think that way, and that is wonderful. So everything is wonderful, Dhamma. Dhamma is wonderful. And from within the mind, 1,000 changes and mind-right transformation arise. Could this happen if it were not wonderful? Actually, I could talk about the wonderful for several hundred years and never finish. If I finish, it would not be wonderful. It's just because there is no end to speaking of that, it is wonderful. Sakyamuni Buddha taught the Dhamma for 49 years in over 300 Dhamma assemblies and never went beyond the wonderful. The word wonderful then includes the entire Tipitaka with its 12 types of sutta texts. The word wonderful includes all of the Buddha Dhamma. Not one of them goes beyond it. Isn't this wonderful? The great master Zi Zhe took 90 days to speak about the word wonderful. But really, one couldn't finish in 90 years. Well, you say, in that case, there's certainly not enough time in one lifetime to hear the entire sutra explained. Better not listen. Don't worry, in the atomic age, everything happens very fast. Lecturing on the sutra fast is also wonderful. Faster or slower is still wonderful. If Sakyamuni Buddha did not lecture beyond the wonderful, how could I now stray from the wonderful? If we could stray from it, then it would not be wonderful. It's wonderful precisely because we cannot leave it. Although the Dhamma is wonderful, if we wish to understand it, we must put down our attachment to the notion of wonderful. And you don't put it down, it's still wonderful. But if you put it down, it's even more wonderful. If you don't believe me, try it out. Put down both your body and mind, so that inwardly there is no body and mind. Outwardly there is no world. So this is beautiful, Dhamma. You can understand. When people and Dhammas are empty, when all is completely empty, could this be anything but wonderful? To obtain the genuine wonder that is inherent within the nature of us all, everything must be put down. Inwardly, you have no body and mind, and outwardly, there is no world. And yet, you still have not separated from your body and mind and the world. It is not the case that in order to be without body and mind or world, you must separate from the body and mind and world. It is right within the body and mind, right within the world, that they do not exist. I often say, so you must understand this stanza that Xuanhua spoke. The eye views external form, but inside there is nothing. The ear hears mundane sound, but the mind does not know. So this one is beautiful. This one is referring to our nature, the awareness of it before the knowing. Yeah. The moment you go to memory and create a knowing, then this poem doesn't arise or doesn't stand. You say the eyes see external form or view external form, but inside there is nothing. You can only do that if you are with that nature in pure awareness, to see things as they are, without words, without concept. That is our true nature, our true mind. So similarly for hearing, the ear hear mundane sound or vibration, but the mind does not know. It's before the perception, before the what they call knowing. So it's just that pure perception, just the awareness of it. This is also at the point of there being nobody and mind inside and no one outside. Such an accomplishment is not easy. Yeah, this is very true. Unless you can meditate until you realize that nature so clearly, you cannot be in that state. It is in fact extremely difficult. And so it is wonderful. What is easy is also wonderful. It is all wonderful. Everything is wonderful. Nothing goes beyond the wonderful Dhamma. No wonder great master Qi Zi Zhe, Zi Zhe, this Mandarin word, Zi Zhe, took 90 days to explain it. There is no way one could ever finish explaining it. No way. The wonderful Dhamma is difficult to speak of. Because it is difficult to speak of, it is wonderful. As difficult as it is still, we shall speak of it. And that in itself is wonderful. No matter how you explain the wonderful, it's wonderful. In general, then, wonder, 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 wonder. Everything is wondrous, filled with wonder and wonderful. You ask, as wondrous, filled with wonder, and wonderful as it is, ultimately, what is the function of this wonder? And you're asking that question is also truly wonderful. One cultivates and practices Zen meditation or Chan meditation in order to find the wonder. Seeking the wonderful, Sakyamuni Buddha practiced ascetic practices in the Himalayas for 6 years. Seeking the wonderful. Bodhisattvas cultivate the Bodhisattva way. Arahant puts everything else aside to seek the wonderful. Common people cultivate the way, seeking the wonderful. Sages also cultivate seeking the wonderful. The position of Buddhahood is called wonderful enlightenment. The highest level of Bodhisattva attainment is called equal enlightenment. And it is not as high as wonderful enlightenment. Only the Buddha have attained wonderful enlightenment. So we must understand the wonderful. What function does it leave? It has no function at all. It is entirely useless. And yet everything depends on it. Speaking of the great function, the great creative power of the wonderful, you might say, let it go and effuse the universe. Born from the wonderful are heaven, earth, and all creation. Do not hold a mistaken notion that God or people created the universe. It was created from the wonderful. Only the Buddha can truly understand the wonderful. The inherent Buddha nature is called the Buddha nature of wonderful enlightenment. Perhaps you think, I can't expect it to be easy to understand the wonderful. If it weren't easily understood, it wouldn't be called wonderful. But again, you are wrong. If you could easily and effortlessly understand the wonderful, that would be even more wonderful. To exert great effort to understand is also wonderful. However, no matter what you say about it, it is wonderful. In all directions, is the way. To the left and right, one meets the source. Now this one is beautiful. Eh? In all directions is the way. Means cultivation can be done in any form, any manner. You can start from anywhere. Because it's not fixed, not rigid. So in all direction is the way. And the other understanding is life itself is the meditation. That's why in everything we do in all direction is the way. Then to the left or to the right, whatever direction you go, when you cultivate correctly, you will meet the source. Means your true nature. Then you are awakened and understand everything. What do you see that is not wonderful? The lamp, the chair, the table, everything. Absolutely everything is a manifestation of the wonderful Dhamma. If you understand the wonderful Dhamma, then everything is wonderful. If you don't understand the wonderful Dhamma, then all Dhammas are unwonderful. And although you may think that you understand them clearly, actually you don't understand them at all. If you look deeply into their basic substance, you will find that they are all arise from the wonderful. So last summer, Shen Hua said he took 96 days to explain the Surangama Sutta. In this sutta, there is a discussion of 50 kind of deviant samadhi or demonic state associated with the five skandhas. All of these demon states or deviant samadhi are higher than the states of present-day heavenly demons and non-Buddhist religious religions. So in giving a certain religion the title ghostly and demonic, I am actually giving it more credit than it is due. Members of this religion are actually not as good as demons and ghosts. No doubt the demons and ghosts wouldn't even take them for their grandchildren or grandson. But because I am personally acquainted with these people, I have given them rather elevated titles of demons and ghosts. The wonderful functioning of the spiritual power of the five skandhas, 50 skandhas demons, are extremely powerful or strong. Some of them can emit light from the top of their forehead and then transfer it to your head so that your head also emit light. In Buddhism, however, such spiritual power are considered demonic, more demons. So people who cannot even emit light cannot rightly be called demons. They are more like houseflies. They burst north, east, south, west, back and forth. But they can't find a way out. Blind followers are just like that. Blind followers are those who cultivate the way under the guidance of a blind man. If you don't understand, you should study a religion that will teach you how to understand. This particular religion's theory are riddled with fallacy and its methods simply didn't work. And yet it claims to incorporate all the religion. In China, we say he slapped his own face until it swells so that he can have chubby cheek. Ordinary people without much understanding are led astray by this blind man. In the world, there are few people who possess understanding and many who do not. Many are deluded, few are those with wisdom. Wise people like to hear true principle. Those without wisdom listen to the teaching of those who confuse them and lead them astray. I'm not trying to insult anyone, but those who follow this teaching do so because they do not want to put an end to sexual desire. They want to do as they please, and so they like this religion. Buddhism teaches us how to sever the sexual desire. As the Surangama Sutra states, cultivating the way without cutting off sexual desire is like cooking sand, hoping to get rice. It is impossible. If you think you can enjoy both the mundane pleasure of worldly desire and the ultimate bliss of the transcendental as well, you are mistaken. It cannot be done. You cannot have both. There are some people who investigate the Buddha Dharma, but they merely use their brain and mouth and don't actually do the work, because they do not rely upon the method taught by the Buddha in their practice. They resemble demons and cannot be called disciples of the Buddha. Some people say that they believe in Buddhism and yet they do not even bow to the Buddha. They are in some severe retribution. Whether they wind up as animal, ghosts, or hell beings cannot be known for sure. Those who study Buddha Dharma must do so according to the methods taught by the Buddha. It is a serious mistake to see yourself as bigger than the Buddha. Students of the Dhamma must revere not only the Buddha, they should bow to the Bodhisattvas, the Arahants as well, and to all those who have great goodness or virtue and cultivation. They must not be arrogant and proud and think of themselves as number one. When the Chinese character of Xiao, Zi, and Grey, Ta are put together, they make the character for stinky. What is the Chinese word? Yeah, la, zi ta, combine, stinky.
这个什么是臭啊？臭，嗯，臭，嗯。People
who study the Dhamma should never be egomaniacs and think of themselves as great. Instead, we must be humble. Yeah, humility is very important and kind to all people. In the 12th chapter of the Dhamma Flower Sutta, the story of never sighting Bodhisattva is related. Who was never sighting Bodhisattva? He was a former incarnation of Sakyamuni Buddha cultivating the Bodhisattva way. He exclusively practiced the 10 great kingly vow of universal worthy Bodhisattva or Samantarabhadra Bodhisattva. The 10 special vows, great kindly vows. They are listed as below. The first vow is they vow to worship and respect all Buddha. One should respectfully bow to all Buddhas of the 10 directions and the 3 period, past, present, and future. Praise the thus come one. You ask, does the Buddha like people to praise him? That's a good question. Yes, he does. However, praising the Buddha is just praising yourself. But I don't want to praise myself, you see. Then don't praise the Buddha, because the Buddha and the living beings are the same. Well then, if I'm a Buddha, I don't need to bow to the Buddha, do I, you see. Wrong again. Although your inherent nature is Buddha, you have not yet cultivated it. And so you are not yet identical with the Buddha and have not certified to the fruit. If everyone were a Buddha, then Sakyamuni Buddha would not have had to go to Himalayas to meditate for 6 years and then sit beneath the Bodhi tree for 49 days before becoming enlightened and realizing Buddhahood. He would not have had to toil so bitterly, could he? Sakyamuni Buddha cultivated all manners of beetle practice in formal life and all kinds of dhyan samadhi. He practiced giving, dana, sila, morality, kanti, patience, then vigor. Vigor is virya, and pranya, wisdom, to all kinds of dhammadas. In his life as Shakyamuni Buddha, however, he still had to undertake ascetic practices in the Himalayas and sit underneath the Bodhi tree, where finally one night he saw a bright star and awakened to the world. To say nothing of 6 years, you haven't even sat in the Himalayas for 6 days or 6 hours, and you claim to be a Buddha? That's too much of a bargain. Your Buddha is really too inexpensive. So those who say they are Buddhas are shameless, brazen, and outrageously impudent. Never citing bodhisattvas, never look down on anyone. When he saw the Buddha, he bowed. When he saw bodhisattvas, arahant, bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, and ordinary people, he also bowed. And he said, "I dare not slight you, for you will all become Buddhas. To slight you would be to slight the Buddha, means to offend an ordinary sentient being. It's like offending a future Samasambuddha Buddha." His devotion was completely genuine, without the slightest trace of falsehood. He practiced respecting all of living beings with total sincerity. As a result, he was rebelled by bhikkhus of overwhelming arrogance. "You don't understand anything about the Buddha Dharma," they say, "and yet you go about transmitting prediction at random." They scream at him and they beat him. When he bowed, they kick him. They even kick his teeth out. Under these circumstances, most people would have certainly discontinued the practice of bowing. But instead of giving up, never sliding bodhisattva began bowing at a distance. He bowed, and without waiting for the person to come near him, he quickly moved away. Such was the practice of Shakyamuni Buddha in the former incarnation as never sliding bodhisattva. Shakyamuni Buddha did not become a Buddha overnight. He practiced all kinds of giving, all kinds of morality, all kinds of patience, all kinds of vigor, all kinds of dhyana, samadhi, and all kinds of prajna. He cultivated the 6 perfections and the 10,000 conducts through many lifetimes. The son and grandchildren of demons now shamelessly say everyone is a Buddha, their speech is deviant, and their practice is crooked. People who think that they are Buddha do not recognize the Buddha. This is like declaring yourself the emperor of electing yourself as president. Without an election or having loyal supporters, no one will recognize you. Such people always end up in jail because they totally disregard the country's law. In fact, they are not shown the least bit of courtesy and are sometimes even beheaded. In Buddhism, people like this are certain to fall into the hell realm because they think that they are Buddhas. But instead of cultivating, they create offenses. They use the Buddha's name to cheat and swindle people. "I am Buddha, so are you," they say, "and we should do this and that." They devise schemes to cheat the world. Don't take it lightly. It's not a game. It's more dangerous than sleeping every night with an atomic bomb. Oh, such an analogy is really frightening, huh? In your embrace. People who act this way are destined for no place but hell, it is it. Okay, we stop here. Okay, so we will continue. But before we open up for meditation reporting and also question and answer or Q&A session or sharing on the Dhamma, I would like to just add on to what is discussed today. What is discussed today is mainly about the wonderful Dhamma. So this wonderful Dhamma is the hallmark of the Lotus Sutta. 妙法莲华经 That's why 妙法 And lotus is a very good analogy、Because the lotus flower as we know grew up from the muddy pond、based among sentient beings They also come from the world from the muddy pond Then everything arises Then inside in the muddy pond you got a lot of things the fishes, the mud the plants and many many things even the water, the flies, the insects and everything but there is this lotus that usually able to survive then when they rise above the mud they blossom beautifully they are from the mud yet it doesn't affect them because they have the Dhamma this is a very good analogy so wonderful Dhamma Lotus Sutta is a very appropriate title And the other thing that I want you to understand is every time I share with you all after you have the Dhamma, then you can leave the third phase of Dhamma. You can reap the fruition of your hard work. Then you can get to experience all of the pristine beauties and wonders of life. And this pristine beauty and wonders of life is what the wonderful Dhamma is. After you have realized the truth, the awakening, the enlightenment, everything is so pristine and so wonderful, so beautiful, whatever you come to experience. That's why these two are related. Yeah. Then when you understand, means you have the truth, the Dhamma. That's why everything, no matter what happens, is always wonderful. Because whatever that arises, There are causes and conditions behind. And everything, when you really look at it from the nature, is so pristine. Pristine. But when the mundane mind comes in with the conditioning, everything, then the duality starts, the like and dislike, the prejudice, and all these things start. That's why you lose your ability to experience the pristine wonders and beauties of life. You must have that mind, that understanding, in order to realize that. So this is the added Dhamma for most of you who are cultivating diligently. So that it will help you. Okay, so with that, I will open up for maybe Dhamma discussion, which is also meditation reporting and Q&A.
Okay, thank you. The other thing I want to mention, Radio, other than this wonderful Dhamma, is also the wonderful Kayamitas, you know.
Yes, that's why everything is wonderful.
Yes, everything is wonderful, the wonderful Kayamitas, you know. Yeah. So actually from them, I read a lot of the transcript books that, you know, they have written, you know. Without that treasure,
Oh, your sound is gone.
The treasure, the opportunity. So the interference come again, Brother Teo.
Just now we can't hear you for a while.
Yeah, you see, that's why I also noticed I have this intermittent loss of voice.
So that
is a problem that...
Now it's okay. Now
today
it's okay.
I listen. Today I follow Brother Chin Hao advice. The last Tuesday I used the mobile data. Today I used the Wi-Fi. So also both also have the same problem.
Is it? next time...
Anyway...
next time... Yes. Do you have a laptop or a table computer? You log in through the computer.
Yes, I have.
It's more stable. Your handphone, sometimes the signal not strong. You log in through the computer. Yeah, it is better.
Yeah, because if I use the computer, it's a common area that I cannot, because a lot of people using the TV.
Oh, you don't have a room where you can use it alone.
I can bring it in, but it's I have to set up it, you know.
A bit
cumbersome in a way. But all the time, most of the time, the handphone's still okay. It's just that, you know, on and off at this problem.
Yeah, you must be at a place where the signal is strong.
Yes. So now I run to the room with the booster signal. So I don't know whether
that one will help.
Yeah, that it may help. Yes. Okay. So coming back to this wonderful Kayamitas, right? So they have written a lot of transcript books. So this is also wonderful Dharma.
Yeah, definitely.
I also like to express my gratitude to them because I have wonderful books to read, you know.
That's why when you understand the Dharma, everything in life is wonderful. Initially, when you started, you also don't know anything. Like you say, you are very new. And that itself is wonderful. Where from there, you establish sincerity and then you get yourself developing the affinity and the condition with other Kayamita. Then you learn from each other. Then you develop the affinity to actually cultivate together. That's why everything that we go through is wonderful Dharma. Without those causes and conditions, things will not be what it is. And for people who cannot have the condition to cultivate or to come across the beautiful Dharma, that itself is also wonderful. Well, that is their karmic obstruction, the karmic thing. So when you understand, everything is wonderful. Whether it's something that you believe is good or not so good, both are wonderful. Well, everything that arises, like the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions behind. So when you understand that, you will come to know there are causes and conditions behind whatever that arises. That's why it's wonderful. Not able to have, not knowing, everything is wonderful. They're able to penetrate and develop all this understanding is also equally wonderful.
Yeah. So this wonderful explanation is so vast and
Because when you understand the Dhamma, you understand suchness. Thing is just the way it is. That's why it has its wonderful nature, the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Everything is there. That is what I have been sharing with you all. So this Dhamma is really wonderful. When you understand, it's not just the duality we attach to the good, the wholesome. Then the not so good and not so wholesome, we try to push away. And that is the worldly Dhamma, the duality that creates suffering, attachment, like and dislike, mundane thinking. But when you have the Dhamma understanding, when you understand suchness, the causes and conditions behind the arising of all phenomena and all things, then you realize thing is just the way it is. That's why it's wonderful. It's beautiful. No matter what happened, everything is just wonderful. That's why the pristine wonder and beauty of life. And that aspect is most important. And that is the message my nature tried to share with you all. You can continue, Bo-Cheng.
Thank you, bro. But so I was saying of this wonderful Kayamita, so I'd like to express my gratitude and
sharing
the effort in putting in writing all the transcript books.
Everybody that helps out.
Because I often go back to refer the books, you know, as I want to understand further, you know. I always go back to the books like the Heart Sutra, the unique codes, you know, brother.
In fact, the Heart Sutra and the unique code and all this transcript book, it involved a lot of people's assistance and hard work, especially the Heart Sutra.
Yeah.
So many people played their role. Even later on when we compile them, a lot of Kayamita came in and volunteered to give their time and support and service. Then we need to actually receive them, then screen through them, then categorize them. That's why all the things that are able to be categorized is a result of all the Kayamita who help out. And the main person is Sister Lee Silgate, because she actually was the prime person behind, because she invited me over to the Sifu's temple. Yeah, the Sifu's temple is the Mahayana Vihara, they call Wuping Jingse. So this area, they actually teach Mahayana, and mainly Mandarin-speaking practitioner and teachers. Seldom you find English-speaking cultivators or teachers. But I was so surprised, she invited me over. Then the things that happened after that was meant to be. This Heart Sutta was the one that she intended to ask me to teach and to share. Then that time, I can just agree, because I can sense the condition behind. Everything is meant to be. Then when it started, she also like very keen to take down the short notes. And the short note that she take down initially, actually, I pity her too, because a lot of things she couldn't understand at that time. But the good thing is, whatever bits and pieces that she take down, give me the condition to recall what I share. So because of that, I actually spend a lot of time tidying up the thing. And I have to like recall what I teach and share, then I put them into short notes. But I summarize them so that it is useful, because I realized this type of Dhamma is very important. And we did it for 15 months, so just imagine. And every of this was fairly long session. That's why I said there are a lot captured in the recording but not able to put into the short notes. But because of the intensity of the sharing, I later on told Sister Lee and a lot of Kayamita, all the Dhamma that you all need is already there, because over the 15 months, I shared all the essential sainthood way Dhamma and some very brief, the Bodhisattva way and the Mahayana teaching. But mainly is the essential Dhamma that is needed for Dhamma cultivation and awakening. That's why I say, with that Heart Sutta published, printed, we can use it for our retreat, because it's very complete. Then later on, I think after 2013, end of 2013 to 2014 onward, suddenly the condition for the Bodhisattva way came out. People make the request, people wrote to me, then I agree to share that teaching. That's why now we are moving on to the Bodhisattva way cultivation. That's why we covered all the important Mahayana sutta that deals with Bodhisattva way cultivation. Initially it was the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, then now the Lotus Sutta. So all this is a result of what happened. That's why it's wonderful. So initially, whatever arises, people may not understand that it's wonderful. But when it comes to fruition, when it flower to what it is today, then you realize, wow, really, that was wonderful. Even Miss Lee, not knowing me, first time came, because I think there was a friend who told him about me, Chris from Klang, Chris Yap, I think. Then he decided to attend. Initially, she didn't really want to come. But after a while, strangely, we are after Crystal May, then no more news for quite a while, I think 1 or 2 months. Then suddenly, Chris called me. Sibrati, remember I told you that Sister Lee, she is coming. Oh, I said, Sadhu. Then the moment she came for that class, she knew already that this is the person he is looking for to learn the real teaching. Then after that, he went to my Saturday class, the meditation session. Oh, after that, she determined to invite me over to teach at Vihara, the Wu Ping Xing. That's how it all started. That's a small thing like that is really wonderful. You may not know the ultimate full picture, but the starting of it is wonderful. Where I saw the causes and conditions, I can feel it is meant to be. Then everything evolved. Then the website, everything also meant to be. Then Brother Lau came. Then Chin Hao's sister came out with the idea. That's why things that are meant to be will unfold and happen. I didn't do anything. Like I said, this life, I just echo and flow. Everything is so wonderful. Meant to be will be. Yeah. That's why without the Dhamma understanding, all these are not possible. Mm. So like you're sharing, you're starting to understand all this. That's why you appreciate the Kayamita who has helped done all this. And it gives me the condition to explain how the Heart Sutta actually come about and meant to be all this. So these are wonderful. Sadhu, Bojang.
Sadhu for this wonderful Heart Sutra and all Kayamita's hard work.
Everything that happened in life is really wonderful. Yeah, it's meant to be good or bad. Causes and conditions. If you have the Dhamma, if you can understand, then it is the way things are. That's why true suchness, ta-ta-ta. Yeah. So we have to have this understanding. Mm. The Dhamma is very wonderful. Where it's the way things are, the reality of life and existence. Everything is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will like that. So you cannot say it's right or wrong. When it's right or wrong, it's already deviating from the true principle. The true principle is to transcend duality. That's why it's wonderful. Everything is just wonderful, meant to be, will be. Mm. Yeah, you can continue.
Mm. Brother Teo, your explanation or summary of it is very beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that's why you all must go back and listen to all this. Because when I share from the text, a lot of you are new. I don't think you can get the deep meaning of the word wonderful. But for us who are cultivators, we know what they try to express. But Xuanhua didn't explain why it's wonderful, why all these things are wonderful. But it's meant to be the way it's supposed to be, like the Buddha said, when causes and conditions are such, things will be such. That's why it's always wonderful. No matter good or bad, right or wrong, or whatever way you look at it, if it's meant to be, will be. But this is the reality. That's why the reality is always beautiful, wonderful. That's why I say when you have the Dhamma, when you have awakened, your nature is so different. You can live life, experience life to the fullest. You can experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Because everything is so pristine, so beautiful. Where when you, like Xuanhua mentioned, when you can see things as they are from your nature, no longer using your discriminative mundane mind, thinking mind, conditioned mind, your views, opinion, and belief system and conditioning. That one gone means you see truth, you see the reality that nature see is so different. That's why everything is wonderful within that seeing. their understanding. So this is really wonderful, sadhu.
Sadhu, 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 radio. Okay, radio. Yeah. Okay, since now the internet is still quite stable, so I will share my meditation. Sharing. It happened a week ago, more than a week ago. So, radio, as usual, I do a bit of meditation before I sleep. So, soon after I went to sleep, lying down and went to sleep. So, I sleep, right? So, nothing happened. And then afterwards, towards the end, just before I wake up, there is a message. There's a message that pop up, you know?
Oh, okay.
So, the message pop up and it says something, like, you know, and it's very clear and it's a written message, you know? Yes, I look at it. Hey, so funny this message, you know. So I was look. I mean, obviously, when I just before I wake up.
Yeah.
Okay. Then when I wake up, the message pop up again. You know, the message pop up again. So I said, "Hey, it's a one message, huh?" So I look at it. Oh, but I wasn't dreaming, Bradio.
I know. I understand. Yeah.
So no.
Can you describe the message or not?
Yeah, I can. It's, I think okay. I don't want to say anything because it's just a message. The message is in English. There is subtle craving. So after that, that's it. I wake up, and then this message appear. I appear in my consciousness. I know. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So Bradio, I can relate to it because I was cultivating, like I told you, right? Every day I'm doing cultivation of kaya and the feeling, you see? So when my feeling, like and dislike, you know, of my senses, right? So from my sense doors, right? So I have likes and dislike. And then when I observe it, so with the light, it's pleasant. Then with the dislike, it's unpleasant.
Whether
pleasant or unpleasant, you see, usually, the way I observe it, I see it, like, for example, when I'm eating, right, and somebody is eating next to me, and I hear the noise of the eating, because I have that dislike conditioning. So I say, so I observe it, and then it go away. So, but the thing is, I observe the whole thing and then it go away. So I don't react to it, but I know that is a dislike. Okay. At the same time, I know it's through my ear. Okay. And then let me see. Bradio, through your teaching, right? Through your teaching, know that these are all the what you call that, condition arising entities, you know. Ultimately, you know. So because you see I arising, I see gone, so it doesn't belong to me, you see. All this I understand, so I see it. So but I have to observe it a few times before actually the feeling of unpleasantness go away, you know.
Yeah, because when you're silent, you can see your mind's reaction, but you have to be careful. If you do this too often, no wonder the message come out, it can become a form of analysis or reasoning. So when you start to analyze and reason, then you can get caught in sankara. That's why I tell you still got subtle craving. But you want to know. No need to know. Actually, the understanding frees your mind. So like you say, you were eating, okay? Then you observe that other people also eating, but normally they make noise, understand? The either the spoon or the plate or whatever. So a lot of people, even though they are cultivators, they become so attached to perfection, to the right way of eating. They expect you to eat mindfully, quiet, no noise. It's the wrong understanding of what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is just an awareness, sati. Of course, when you are mindful, you eat with more thankfulness and all these things. But some of these sounds are meant to be will be. So don't be like very petty over it, like worry, then like want to comment. This is not right. This is rude. This is what I understand. Certain Mayana tradition, they really discipline the cultivator to be very orderly and eat quietly. Then everybody wash their thing very nicely. I mean, you can go through that type of training is something which is also wonderful. That's why I use the word wonderful. I don't want to say it right or wrong. It's wonderful because people see the discipline. But when it comes to actual cultivation, you have to understand it's the understanding that liberates the mind and free the mind. Like you say, every Dhamma that I share and teach is to let you understand that all these are dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. They arise because of causes and condition. And when causes and conditions cease, it cease. So this is what the Dhamma is. That's why it exhibits the characteristics of impermanence. But when you attach and cling to your habitual tendency, when you want things your way, then you realize your mind still. There is a like and a dislike. You cannot see things as they are. You cannot accept the reality of the moment. That's why you doesn't understand that whatever the condition is meant to be. Condition like that, things will be like that. People who lack that type of tactfulness or training, they will behave that way. That's why the key understanding is to have that wisdom to see things as they are and develop the acceptance of every condition. Then just accord and flow. Thing is just the way it is, meant to be, will be. So if the training is appropriate, then everybody will be mindful, aware, and able to deliver accordingly. Then we will have a very conducive community of cultivator or Dhamma practitioner, or in our case is Kayamitas. That's why Kayamita who has the Dhamma, they are different. They are more aware, more mindful. They are relaxed and very natural. Not like other type of cultivator, oh, very rigid one. Oh, cannot make noise, sit, cannot move. And I never teach like that. That's why whatever that is rigid is not the true Dhamma. The true Dhamma is to develop wisdom to accord and flow and to be at peace with all things. So when you say you are doing the kaya is very easy. Where you anchor your mindfulness to your movement. That is to stabilize your mindfulness. Then after that, when your mindfulness is already stable, then you can actually apply it to be mindful of the other three foundations like I explained the other day. You must listen to this. Of course, initially is to your feeling. So to your feeling means what? You listen to this, not to analyze, not to reason. That one is all sankhara activity and movement. The Buddha's instruction is very simple. When feeling arise, aware. Aware means what? Don't try to know. Then when you aware, you will come to know. When feeling has become unpleasant, also aware. When feeling has become pleasant, also aware. Then you can see through that silent mind how you stir your mind, how you react. How does the pleasant and unpleasant feeling, which is sensual desire and ill will, arise? This is what the Satipatthana saying. You will come to know how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be because you are aware. Then when you are continue to be aware, then what happens? When you meditate means you silence your mind and develop awareness. Then what happens? That craving, the sensual desire, the ill will, the like and dislike will cease because you are just aware. No memory, no condition, no need to reason, nothing. Just aware. Then it ceases. then you realize, like exactly like the Buddha said, you will come to know how the arisen sensual desire and ill will cease. How the arisen sensual desire and ill will come to pass and cease. By not doing anything. Not trying to, like, using the Dhamma to reason or to analyze. Oh, like Brother Teo say, I must not have craving, I must not attach, I must not hold on to all this, I accept them for. These are all reasoning. This one is not wisdom. The wisdom part is different. Where you silence everything and just feel the way, then you realize the movement. Then you come to know how the unarisen one arises. Then you develop the contemplative understanding. How come I still exhibit, the mundane mind still exhibit this type of movement? The like and dislike, the craving, the habitual tendency. And then you will come to know, because you cannot accept the reality of the moment. You still have your choice, like and dislike. Doesn't mean you cannot eat good food, understand? No? But these are your habitual tendency that has a reason. Then when you understand, then you live. Live means what? No longer like before. Why should I do all this? If it's good food, I just taste it. Then I understand. This is good food. I will not develop craving. When there is no condition to eat, never mind. Let things be. But when there is condition to have, I will just taste it. Eat it, the pristine beauty, wonders. I have it. Doesn't mean that I have craving. No, because there is condition for the arising of all this. Then when I smell something, the memory will say, this is pungent. This is fragrant. These are my conditioning. That's why when I come to understand, I remember when I mindfully walk into the Pasamalama one, then I pass by the Clutton Square, Waisakai, you know, the drain there, the manhole there, normally it emits a type of smell, quite pungent and quite strong. But when I walk by, my nature was aware, and I knew this is the conditioning. Last time I would have reacted, like don't want to breathe and walk away. No, I just smile, wow, and I just walk. The thing is just the way it is. When I am nearby, conditioned like that, I will pick it up. Then what I do when I pick it up, that is the wisdom part. I don't try to reason or analyze what must I do, what did the Buddha say, or what did Brother Teo say. No. You just understand. Thing is just the way it is. Because conditioned like that, things will be like that. So, you got two choices, like I always say. Remember these two choices. One is to accept the reality and just continue to walk by with joy, with understanding, and be at peace. Then be mindful, fully aware of the environment, everything. The other one is to react to what has been sensed. Then you realize you are not being heedful and mindful. That's why you still do all those things, which are normal, mundane, sentient being, putujana, whose mind can be stirred. And this is the right way to cultivate. Then when you are at the Pasamalam, you know all the food, all the whatever, you can observe. So beautiful. Like last time you remember when you started, that time you had that type of mind. Buying fruit, you say, with mindfulness can be so beautiful. So much joy. It's so different. The thinking not there. The what they call mundane sankhara activity, chattering, dialogue or reaction, all not there. It's so pristine, so beautiful. And you have so much joy. So this is the cultivation. So when you go too deep into the analysis, then you end up like what song went through. You want to know whether you have progressed or not. And that is one thing to know. Then you want to know whether your mind still stir or react or not. Or whether you, it's not like that. Cultivate it. The wisdom is most important. When the wisdom is there, you know how to act. That's it. Finish. And how you act, your awareness will know. Your yoniso manasikara will prompt you and you will know. And just finish. Subside. That's why your mind becomes more and more peaceful, more and more equanimous. But yet you can live life. You can be with the moment in all activity. And everything is very pristine, very wonderful, very beautiful. Meant to be will be. You no longer like before. So this part, Po Cheng, you and Song, they all need to really understand them. Then you will avoid the pitfall of analysis and reasoning, wanting to know. Okay?
Yes, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Brother.
Yeah.
Actually, is how should I say that? When it first happened to me, I'm just observing it. But when I see a few times, then I say, maybe I have to like do a reflection, you know, what is going on, like trying to understand the source of the how you call that, the stirring, you know, like trying to reverse the what you call that, the sixth sense doors, you see, so that I understand, I can reverse it, you know. That is where I did the reflection and understanding to connect it. But after I have done all this, right, Ratio, then when I do my sitting, my lying down meditation, right, a few days later, that is when this message pops up. Said,
yeah, the message is correct because you have done it wrongly. You know why or not? It become analysis because this mindfulness, the four foundation, when you do, like you say, you want to reflect and contemplate why your mind still stir. So the first thing that went wrong was you didn't really silence this time. You straight away go and attach to the stirring where you think you know and you want to find out the reason. You want to straighten your way. No. Silence everything and don't do anything until the awareness realizes its cessation. Means this thing will end on its own without analysis, without reason, without using the mundane mind, the thought process. Realize that one first. Then you will come to know, exactly like the Buddha said, you will come to know initially how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Okay? So that one, when you reflect and contemplate, you only need to ask yourself one question. How come you still do this? What has caused this to continue? These are your habitual tendencies. Why can't you end it? Means your wisdom is not stable enough. So knowing that, you have to move on to the second step. Develop awareness-based meditation. Silence everything and stay with it. Then when you silence and don't do anything, no more thought energy to analyze the reason, it ceases. Then when it ceases, you come to know everything is not what you think. Emotion, anger, sensual desire, ill will is not intrinsic, not you. These are dependent originating mind state condition that arise because you hold on to certain habitual tendency, conditioning. So this one need to be ended through understanding. If you maintain awareness and let it cease, then you realize how the arisen sensual desire can come to pass and cease. Through what? Through not doing. Through an understanding. Thing is just the way it is. I have to accept the reality and be at peace. Means what? I have to straighten my view, not to stir anymore. But not through an effort. Through an understanding that if I am mindful and aware, all this cease. That's why when I want to eat good food, I can experience it. I don't have to like, don't want to have craving or aversion, trying to remain equanimous. That is not living life. That is trying to restrain from everything and trying to suppress your emotion. Wisdom is not to suppress. Wisdom is to understand and be normal. Like the Buddha said, he never teach people not to see, not to hear, not to smell, not to taste. Then you don't have defilement. No! He said, see, and yet, see with wisdom and understanding. In the seeing, there is only the seeing conscious, no one to see. That's why there is an awareness. When the ego is gone, when conditioned voice arising is gone, when you don't arise the thought, then it ceases. So this one, you need to meditate to stabilize the understanding. Then finally, you will come to the understanding like what I described to you many, many years back when I was walking to the Pasamalam. That day was the day I tested my mind. I was full of mindfulness, awareness, and joy. Then my senses were so sensitive. Then everything I pick up, my nature understand, and I move on. And there is joy. There is no reasoning. There is no like analysis or trying to do things based on knowledge. No. The understanding is there. Everything is just the way it is. Very beautiful, very pristine. Condition like that, things will be like that. You got two choices. Stay at peace and continue with your awareness and be with everything in life, in existence. Not to be affected by what happened. But that is the wisdom part. That's why you will echo and flow. Everything becomes so pristine, so beautiful. So this is what you have to develop understanding. Huh? It's not easy. Because that danger of going into reasoning and analysis through knowledge is very common, especially people who use Dhamma knowledge. So for your case, I think you are at the stage where I think song they are also same. Because when you become too enthusiastic to know, then you will move into this one. That's why I always advise song to be cautious when it comes to this type of cultivation. Don't go and analyze or reason. Don't try to know. Just stabilize it and let it happen. Then your understanding will come from that nature. It will arise. Then that understanding is the wisdom that will liberate and free your mind. Okay?
Yes, Sadhu, Valpio.
Yeah, yes, Sadhu. Yes. You all should go back and listen to this again.
Yes, yes. Very, very meaningful sharing.
Yeah.
Yes. This is the cultivation that I'm pursuing, yeah. Bratio. Because
that's why when you lie down and meditate, the message came, the subtle craving.
You still
have this, because you haven't rooted out. Otherwise, it won't prompt you with that. Because when you are in that silent awareness based meditation, whatever thing that you want you to know, that nature, it will surface, especially before you wake up.
Sometimes the message came from your nature
or other great beings' nature. They will send the message.
Yes, correct. That's why I thought that message was incredible and wonderful.
Yeah, luckily you reported it. That's why it's very wonderful, beautiful.
Yes, that message I thought was wonderful to tell me that the cultivation need to root out this.
There are a lot of things that cultivator will go through. That as you discuss it, this thing will surface. And more people will benefit and develop the understanding.
Correct, correct. I thought that will also help other Kayamitas also.
Yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
The message came and I say that I better, you know, correct my cultivation, you know, that I have
silence
deeply in my cultivation in the midst of life, you know. Just like my formal meditation, you know, it has to be more deeper in the silent meditation, you know.
Yeah, because when you started, your awareness base went in very stable. That's why at that time, you're able to experience that living, the life. I remember
you report to me
that time. Yes. With mindfulness, you mindfully choose your fruits. And with so much joy. And that is the one not to analyze
you are more meditative, so more silent.
So that one is the real one.
When
your mind state is in that stable state, that one is the real one that you experience. Later on, you will understand all this.
Once
you're too eager to know and go into analysis or reasoning, then you get caught already.
But
today, one will benefit quite a number of Kayamitas. We have Brother Song is also here. Engby is also here. Alicia is also here. Then Pamasuri. Oh, Manyuan also here. Who is this Huawei Mate 10? Oh, PG, Oh, PG also here. So PG will rejoice. PG can understand. So all these are very good. Sadhu.
Sadhu. Thank you for the guidance.
So let us rejoice. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.